KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
That's right. I'm your host for the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And Rich is over there without a microphone.
Let's hold on 1 second.
And my name is Rich.
Okay. Very well done.
The mic will be focused on my mouth for the rest of the show.
All right. So the reason Rich doesn't have a mic is because we have two guests in the studio representing their own new studio, but not a radio studio. So why don't I intro you guys later, intro you guys afterwards. I want to first talk about what I did today, which was go to UPS to send in my Xbox 360, because I finally got the red ring.
Really? Now was this after trying to get the red ring, or
no?
You were just hoping and praying that you might get
it? I don't know if I ever talked about this on the air, but I must have told you, while playing Braid, my system would just freeze up.
No, actually, you didn't tell me.
Right, so that was the first time I ever saw it, and it happened a lot that night. But then, like, I put my system on its side, or put it vertical when it was on its side. I switched whatever position it was in.
Left it in the microwave when you were about to eat dinner.
Yeah, I don't know. It lasted for a while. And then when we were playing Rock Band 2 this weekend, Rich came over playing Rock Band 2, suddenly it started freezing up again. Pissed me off. I thought it must be the hard drive, because that seemed to be what it was
right.
The first time. And
It doesn't sound like a red ring type of defect.
Well, then, so it freezes up, and I try to turn it on again, and it won't turn on. And after like 30 seconds, by not turning on, out come the red rings. And I give my roommate a big high five, like, sweet,
yeah.
Red lights.
I've been wishing for that event on my Xbox for months, because the problem that I have is just so stupidly subtle that, yeah, I'm about to introduce mine to a microwave.
Well, I mean, so I call Microsoft and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm talking to their dude that I'm sure is outsourced to some other country, and I can barely understand him, but he was fairly good. I was like, so it has this problem. He said, okay, well, can you reboot it? And so I reboot it, and I didn't have the hard drive on it anyway. And I was like, all right, seems to be working. You know, it's been doing this minus the red rings for like 2 months now.
Right.
And I was like, all right, well, seems to be working great. So if you need anything else, give us a call back. I said, well, that's cool, but how long do I have to play this game? Like the old, it doesn't work, I call you, I reboot it, it does work, and then it stops
right.
working, and then I call you.
Right. And he said, for about 3 weeks.
And he's like, well, all right, if it happens again, give us a call back, and we'll set up for a return. I was like, all right, and then I asked him another question, because you know how I'm always concerned about transferring or being able to play my games offline that I've downloaded?
Yes.
Right, so they used to not have a system to accommodate this. So if you downloaded a bunch of games, or maps, or whatever it is, any paid content that... Or if it was free before and now it's paid, right? In order to play it without being connected to the internet, it has to be on the serial number system that it was downloaded to. But now apparently they have a license transfer system where you can go, like, tell it, I've got a new system, make all this stuff work on this system now instead of the old one.
They're using their noodle.
Yeah, I don't know how long that's been around,
yeah.
But it fixes the only reason I didn't want my system to go bad. And now apparently they have that. So as he was explaining this to me, my roommate's like, hey, Alon! It froze up again. You got red rings. I was like, kick-ass. Dude, it red ringed again, only in the 5 minutes I was sitting here talking to you.
That's fantastic.
He's like, all right, well, let's set that up.
I can only wish I had such great luck like yours.
Yeah, like, they're pretty killer. We all know their service has been pretty great. So that's cool, and I shipped it back today in some old Xbox box that I found. And supposedly, they're going to automatically transfer the license for me when they do the repair.
Well, so, that's very pleasant.
Anyway, thank you for Microsoft for not being a bunch of douchebags. Stepping up. Taking my system back. That's pretty kick-ass.
Do you think
I have to wait like 3 weeks?
If I took like red lacquer and like painted like 3/4 of a ring around the power button, do you think that they would notice?
I don't think so.
It's so bad, it's red all the time.
Well, honestly, I don't think you play your system all that much.
It's not as much as I want to. Yeah, yeah, and you're right.
So give it some time. It'll happen. As long as it's before that 3 years, then you are good, sir, and you get a new system.
Fantastic.
That's good, right?
It's wonderful.
All right. I wonder how many minutes we have left. What is it? Like 2 minutes?
More than probably we want.
All right. So I'm on the chat room.
A couple of games are coming out. You know,
a lot of games. Well,
one game
in like Christmas.
No, I mean like tomorrow.
What's coming out tomorrow?
Baja.
What is Baja?
So apparently, there's not enough off-road racing games. So
you mean in addition to your favorite Puree game?
In addition to Puree, now Baja's coming out.
What is Baja?
So it's well, interestingly enough, it's actually a game made by a company called 2XL, the developers.
Oh, we know them, don't we?
We know them because 2XL came from Rainbow Studios.
Yeah. Don't we play poker with those guys?
They have played. Yeah, we have played poker with them. You probably have some of their money that used to belong to them.
All right. Yeah. That's cool. Well, you know, I hope their game does really well then.
So yeah. Maybe it doesn't. They'll keep coming to poker games.
All right. So I want to intro our guests, and I'll let you do that. But before we do that, I want to point out, if you go to chatterboxgameshow.com, you're listening to the show live. Feel free to jump in the live chat. I'm in there right now. The game I'm excited about coming out is Little Big Planet. I saw a video of that today.
Like, no, you're excited.
I know.
You're
that,
excited.
That 24-hour challenge, you know, that they were going to do?
Yeah.
Apparently that happened, and somebody made like a mock-up of a Little Big Planet Colossus, a little Colossus planet or something.
Yeah.
Or like they made a giant Colossus you got to climb up it and everything. I'm very excited. I continue to be very excited about this fantastic game.
Right. The day that we actually that you play the game and actually we talk about it, I'm going to be looking forward to.
Yeah, that'll be good stuff.
And not only because you'll finally shut up about it.
Oh no, I don't think so. I'll be like, dude, did you see that new Little Big Planet level?
All right, so
I'm very excited about it. All right, so I'm going to shut up. You go ahead, intro our guests, and then we'll come back after the break and have a little chat.
All right, so we have Chris and Ken from Big Bang Entertainment, and it's a new studio. Did I say something wrong?
No.
No? Okay, fantastic. All right. I was getting the laser eyes for a second. And, right, they're here local in Phoenix, and Ken is the CEO, and Chris is the CTO. And, yeah, take it away, guys. Tell us about...
Does that mean, like, marketing guy in a suit and guy who knows his tech?
I am such not the marketing guy in a suit. Obviously, I'm not wearing a suit, but...
He's just the guy.
I've got a production background, which is probably just as good an exciting a background as a marketing background. But well, I've been in the industry 19 years, and you know, it's just a little bit about me. But yeah, Chris is our tech, one of our tech guys.
So you've been in the industry about as long as Chris has been on the planet.
No, not even.
Not quite.
He was three when I started.
But I'm Chris. I'm the CTO, and I came from Rainbow, and then before that I worked on Kane and Lynch and Hitman over in Denmark with IO Interactive. I lead up the tech side, help to plan our tech and make sure the game code side gets made and that everything comes together.
And it's my understanding that you're pretty snazzy with the PS3.
Yeah, I worked on some PS3 next-gen stuff and some of the early prototype stuff.
Okay, so the focus of this interview is going to be basically how to... I don't know about how. I don't know if we'll talk about how to actually start your own
how,
studio.
How? Step by step. But there's only four steps.
So
and the third one involves question mark.
Yeah. Some of the interesting tribulations, I guess, of starting a new company and how you go about actually doing that. And I don't know if we get to talk about funding. I'm always interested in funding.
Yeah, we're going to take it a step further, right? Everyone talks about, like, oh, I want to know how to make a game. We're just going to completely F that. We're going to tell you how to start a studio.
Even without game ideas?
And profit.
No. Okay, so we'll get into that. So again, both of you guys used to work at Rainbow, and we know you because you worked with Aura.
That's correct.
Right. So you start up a new studio, and all of a sudden you're thrust into having to make games, I guess. And so I want to know what types of games you work on, like the small versus large, right? And some of the difficulties that come into play with actually starting something new. Because I imagine it's hard to get some big company or I don't even know what's entailed. That's why it's hard for me to ask these questions. But like Sony has to be on board with your making a game for them, right?
Right.
For the PS3 and Microsoft with Xbox.
And I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to it. It depends on if you're making PC games or if you're making console games. And depending on which one you're doing depends entirely on how you're starting your company and who you have to talk to get permission or the funding to do so.
Yeah, and you're starting the hard way because making a PC game, anybody can make a PC game and then just figure out how to distribute it. And you guys are making console games, right? Can you even say that?
Oh,
no, we're working on PC product right now.
Really? But,
yep.
Why? How am I confused about this?
You just, you know, assumptions.
All right.
Maybe I should have told you.
Good. Well, there's the music. We'll have the interview as soon as we come back. If you guys have any questions for these folks, put them up on the chat at chatterboxgameshow.com.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
All right, welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We're here with Ken and Chris from Big Bang Entertainment.
That's BigBangEntertainment.com. Don't go on Google and search for Big Bang Studios and find any one of the million other companies called Big Bang Studios.
It's actually not BigBangEntertainment.com.
It's not?
It's BBEGames.com.
Yeah, man, come on, you guys
think
it's Big Bang Entertainment, and then I...
Get it right.
Do you see BBE how hard Games. It was for me to find this website?
Come on, who's going to type in Big Bang Entertainment? That's too much typing for the internet.
I believe you guys have a lot of competition in the namespace.
All right, so I got to ask you, are you guys going to make a game for, like, the Large Hadron Collider, or, like, if they make some black holes and, like, destroy the universe, is that some, like, connection there or what?
Like, we can't talk about that.
Yeah.
So.
All right, they're sworn to secrecy.
Okay, all so... Right. The so sorry, that's I thought you were going with it.
Speaking of black holes.
So what do the other businesses that you deal with think about your name, Big Bang Entertainment?
We've had some interesting reactions from vendors in that. You know, Chris has had a few, like when we're talking about, you know, yeah, getting internet service and stuff like that. And
especially because since we're doing a lot of contract work, we're getting, you know, big internet pipes, you know, like high bandwidth internet fiber connections and stuff like that. And of course, they just immediately assume that we're, you know, some sort of adult entertainment company.
Do they raise your eyebrows like,
No, they just kind of ask and then laugh and with a sigh of relief when they actually hear what we're doing.
Who's they?
You know, the vendors.
Vendors, yeah. like people who are we're buying like internet connectivity from, or
office
networking
chairs,
hardware and stuff like that.
All right. That stuff I don't care about that at all.
You know what I care about?
No.
Well, the thing that
driving games
really most that's true, I do.
Yeah.
But besides that, The one thing that really I was most curious about is, you know, there's a lot of logistics about starting up your own company one way or the other, right? Whether it's a game studio or not.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And I think that a lot of those things, I mean, even I'm completely unaware of. And so, you know, I was wondering, you know, maybe you guys have, I don't know, some cool stories or, you know, tell us about some things that, you know, most gamers would have no idea about that you guys have to actually take care of.
And I mean, it's
in the process of actually starting a studio.
It's not even just gamers. I mean, we've all been around for a while, and there's stuff that took us by surprise with regards to logistics.
Yeah. So was there like a family of ducks living in your office space or what?
No. Well, no. I guess some of the things that are surprising is like how long it takes to negotiate a building lease, even though your landlords might be, you know, very reasonable, very attentive, and things like that. You know, it can take weeks, and you know, to get it negotiated, and then you got to get you know, internet connection, phones, and office furniture, and all kinds of things like that to, you know, before you can even do business, get your servers up and running. And so there's, you know, quite a bit of logistics there, even once you have, you know, your funding and you know exactly what game you're going to work on and all that. So, you know, we knew we had to do that stuff, but sometimes it takes longer to put together than you really...
Yeah,
realize.
For a game studio, I mean, having internet access is pretty critical to us actually being able to communicate with our customers as a contractor, and for our, you know, engineers and artists to do their jobs. And if you're in the wrong location, getting an internet connection that's more than just a DSL modem can take up to 3 to 4 months if they actually have to build stuff out. And if you just landed a contract with a major publisher and now you have to start going into production and developing something, having your studio offline for 4 months can actually shut the whole thing down for you.
So I'm concerned with something a little bit more rudimentary. Like, you guys, at one point, you have jobs, you're working for another video game company, and then you decide, for whatever reason, all right, we're going to jump ship and start our own thing, right? So there's got to be some
initiative. Well, that's not exactly what happened in our case. In those cases, if you are working for another publisher and you want to start, or, you know, another game company, and you want to start something, you got to be very careful of, you know, making sure you leave before you start any of that, because any IP that's generated is owned by, you know, probably your other developer. So in our case, the developer we work for hit a little layoff, you could say, and it affected you know, quite a few of us who ended up, you know, starting the studio. And, you know, I took a look and said, wow, we've got a whole team of like leads and managers and, you know, great designers and that. There's a lot of publishers out there, so, you know, we started knocking on the doors, and we talked to, you know, all the top publishers and that, and, you know, made a lot of ground with them, and, ended up talking to Sony Online. I used to work for John Smedley when I was at Sony myself, and that history there paid off really well. So the
initiative for this company wasn't like, we have this idea, some game that we really want to work on, and it's not going to work at our current studio. Your initiative was, I've got a bunch of unemployed people in one place to take advantage of these resources.
Well, I mean, just...
to a degree, yeah.
Just logistically speaking, actually going from a dead stop or being at another studio to going into production on a game is almost impossible unless you have just the right circumstance and logistics to actually facilitate that for you. And even in our case, where we were jumping into an existing project and we were developing something for an existing studio and a publisher that really wanted to work with us, and having high-level personal connections to that publisher, getting the legal done on the contracts, getting your, hitting the ground and actually starting into that work, still can take months of time.
Well, you didn't even know that. When you decided to start this, you had no idea that you were going to connect with, what is it, Sony? Sony Online or whatever?
Yeah, we're with Sony Online Entertainment.
Right. So
you didn't know that. You just said, we're going to start, and then you had to approach them. Right? So
you
called your old people and said, hey, I want to talk to you about what prospects you have for us? Or?
Right. So we went... So when we talked to publishers, we had a couple of ideas for each one. Sometimes, some publishers we knew, they're not going to do sports games, so we obviously wouldn't pitch a sports game to them. But it's good to have, a couple ideas, things you want to talk about, but also kind of feel out what they're looking for. Maybe they're all full of sports games or whatever. Using that as an example, because it doesn't really apply here, but so it's good to start a dialogue with the publishers to find out what kind of games they're looking for. Some are looking for action games, some are looking for racing games and that kind of thing. And then you try and match, you're best off matching that up with your own skill set and interest too, that helps. And in the case of Sony, we went and talked to them about a couple of PS3 downloadable games. And John said, hey, I've got, some work for you right now. These sound really great in that, but, why don't we work on this other stuff first that I need help with right now? So
they just happened to have projects that they needed work done on, rather than... So you guys...
Correct.
You're saying you came to them with some ideas, things you could make, mm-hmm. and would want them to fund, but instead they said, we've got stuff already, why don't you do this first, kind of prove yourselves?
Right.
That helps, too.
And this is actually a really common scenario for a new game studio starting up, because it's not just filling in missing gaps in their genre lineup, like a sports game or an action game or so on and so forth. It's also platforms, different levels of games, like cost, like maybe they need some casual games instead of all the big AAA stuff that they're developing right now, or maybe they have another title that they've just worked on but they need it to hit other platforms and they don't have the resources in-house to facilitate that. So instead of stepping in and asking them to put a big bet on you to make this game completely from scratch, they might have something for you right away that they can't do internally that they need someone else with expertise to facilitate for them.
So what's a reason they might not be able to do it on their own?
Staffing, first of all. I mean,
if you have to staff 200 people, you have to staff up, say, four projects, 50 people each, that's a lot of people to hire, no matter who you are. So
they just hire you guys for more of a short term so you can develop some small amount of content relative to their large project, and then dump you when they don't need that part's
right, or have us work on something else, or what have you.
So. I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean you're there for when they need you, and they don't have to keep you the whole time.
Right.
Sure,
it's twofold really, because perhaps they are looking for something more later on, but it's a great way for them to get familiar with the developer with a relatively low risk to them as compared to just giving them an advance to develop a whole game, and it fills an immediate need that they have that they can generate profit with low risk, as long as you actually deliver for it.
Right. And also, games cost the big games cost $25-30 million, on the console now. That's a huge bet. And publishers are going to want to have as much security as possible before they place those bets. So for example, if you could get the core of say the Halo team to do a shooter or action shooter or something like that, sci-fi, probably a good bet, right? But if you get the guys who did Halo and you want them to do an MMO, it's a little more of a stretch. So, publishers, especially with the budgets these days, they are really careful to, try and limit their variables as much as possible.
Right. Plus, there's also, if they are developing a big game and they know that, they're going to develop this internally for Xbox 360, but when the numbers come back, it looks like it would really be financially advantageous for them to hit the Wii or to hit the PS3. they might not want to do this big burst of hiring to facilitate that. It might be cheaper for them to actually contract it and not have to deal with the logistics of bringing that many new employees into the studio.
You mean to just port something?
Right.
All right. Well, I got a lot more questions for you. This whole... Well, I'm fascinated about this idea, but I don't think we have enough time to actually go into all my questions. But Ara has his own as well. We'll be back after the break and talk a little bit more about Big Bang Studios.
Mario, you're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
And we're back. BBEGames.com.
That's right.
Is the website.
Big Bang.
Not BBE Games.
Emphasis on the big.
Yeah,
bang.
I really don't think any of our listeners care so much about the website. I don't know if our listeners, high school students and college students, are going to be calling you guys for jobs. But if you're looking for a job, apparently you're hiring. In what fields?
We're hiring senior software engineers and we're hiring designers at all levels right now.
Designers. And all right, you don't want to jump over this guy. You got too much going on.
We talk to each other.
All right.
Good times.
Right. Cool. Do you have some questions for these guys? Do you want me to roll in?
One thing I'm curious about is, over the years, I've known a lot of people to go to startups, and I've heard of a lot of startups, and I've heard of a lot of startups failing. So I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think the main reasons are that, startups seem to so easily come together and then just fall apart so readily?
Well, so easily. It's the hardest thing is getting the first project, and then... and then continuing, to get work after that leads you down a path where you can, keep doing more work. And also, it's got to be work that, people find interesting and things like that. So, that to me, that seems to be probably the biggest challenge.
And you have to remember, kind of like movies, I mean, making games that are profitable in general is a very risky business. A lot of games are made, even big AAA games are made, and they don't make their money back. And if you're, a multi-billion-dollar publisher and you make some huge AAA game that doesn't recoup its development costs,
like Kane and Lynch,
for example, you can kind of divert some of that loss by making it into a franchise and absorbing it for that fiscal year, and you're big enough to take that hit and to roll with it and build something out of it in the long term. But if you're a small developer and you're just on a one game at a time basis with a major publisher, and you make a title that doesn't recoup its development costs, that you're done unless you have something else that you can get money with right away.
So wait, hold on. So you mean to say that if you're a really huge company and you make a game and you lose a lot of money on it, you want to further reduce your risk by making a sequel to that game?
It works sometimes for publishers,
Does that actually work in the long run? Because I have noticed...
Occasionally, it's happened.
Yeah, well, there's a lot less development involved with the sequel, right?
I suppose,
I don't know, like,
right?
Prince of Persia 2 was a lot more profitable than the first one.
Well, and
but at the same time, it also... It feels kind of backward, right? Because it's like, well, we made this... And it's really bad.
Part of the issue is you've got tens of millions of dollars invested in game systems and engines and that.
Right.
That's the bulk of the cost. But once you have,
right?
Yeah, and once you have that up and running, sometimes it makes sense to, hey, we did all the hard work. Now let's just make some more content. It's easier to make some new levels, add some new features and some new features to the engine itself, and you can make that second game for less than the initial one.
Right. And a couple of things.
That's really interesting.
A couple things about that. I mean, first of all, that's true, but also keep in mind that making a sequel isn't always cheaper, depending on what you're trying to do with the sequel. The other thing is that if you have a big staff of 70 people and you finish a game, you have to have something for those 70 people to do in increments as people finish up their work on that project after that game is done. So it's actually very common that certain aspects of the team begin to work on a sequel, like the concept designers and artists. They start working on that sequel before the first game is even remotely done yet. And that's kind of how they deal with the phasing of getting this team off this and the next team onto that. And when they design games, they often design them to be franchises because everyone wants to build that new multi-game franchise that's going to, rake in lots of money for the company.
Because once you have a franchise, then you have, lunchboxes.
Well, yeah, I mean, presumably.
And little figurines and cartoons. Gotta catch them all.
I don't know. It's funny because, it makes sense, right? But it's very interesting because it's kind of like counterintuitive in a way because It's like you've dug your hole, and now it's like your threshold for like deciding if you want to try something new now is different.
Well, if you look at the film industry, it's similar. Like, you know, a lot of movies cost $100 million to make these days. Now, if it weren't for DVD sales on the back end, very few films would get made, I think. So it's different platform at the end. But
well, now you can count on DVD sales and then Blu-ray sales and then the next format sales. The same movie over and over. All right, so I want to get more into what you guys are actually doing now. How much can you tell us about the project you're working on? We already said it's something working for Sony Online.
Right. We're working on, Sony Online is developing a massively multiplayer free-to-play game called Free Realms. And, you know, we don't want to talk, let Sony, you know, roll that out more when they're ready to.
But you're working on
as part of their PR program and stuff like that. Yes. Yeah, so we're doing 3 mini games for as part of their larger game.
Okay. And so we said before the break that you guys didn't decide to. Well, you might have had ideas for your own games, but you approached Sony and they came to you with this project. And so if they hadn't, like if they didn't just give you this relatively small amount of work, right? It's not a ground up project.
Mm-hmm.
Like where would you have to go from there? You've got 10 guys ready to work on stuff. Nothing actually happening. Do you have any idea how you would have proceeded if this hadn't fallen in your lap the way?
Oh, well, okay. Like for example, you know, with Sony, we would have pitched them. You know, we would have talked about our game ideas. Maybe some of those would have stuck to the wall. Maybe that would have sparked some ideas from their side. Like, hey, well, we don't want to do, you know, this kind of game. But maybe if we twist it a little bit, we could use the same tech that you guys wanted to use, but with one of our other licenses or something else we wanted to place or something like that. Or during those discussions, something might come up on their end, and they might say, yeah, we're talking about this, but you know, we need to place a license for this kind of thing or this other game we wanted to do.
Is it common
and
that
then
a publisher,
also we were talking to a lot of publishers at that time as well.
Is it common that a publisher like Sony or anybody else will have a bunch of ideas in their pocket just waiting for a developer?
Not so much just ideas, but it's not uncommon that publishers have things that they want to do that they don't have the resources to attend to that particular thing immediately inside their internal development studios.
Right. So like, I guess one example might be Cars. It was the game I was executive producer for. So we had eventually it ended up on 12 platforms. 12. So it's everything from GBA to Wii, PS3, 360, and that. So there was, you know, a couple hundred people working on all the various games, you know, at different levels and that. So that's hard to, you know, for a publisher to say, okay, well, we can handle all this internally. So you know, in that case, we had one of the versions, like the Activity Center, go outside to an external developer because, you know, we just didn't have a developer who, or, you know, we didn't have internal resources who are specialized in, like, Activity Centers, you know, because it's a little bit of specialty there. There's companies that have engines that they can easily put those up and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, sometimes it might be a couple platforms that, you know, they just isn't enough staff around to do, or maybe it's just not part of the long-term business plan for the company to have that internal staff specialized in those platforms, especially as like a platform is just spooling up or as it's waning at the, you know, the end of a life cycle.
Rich is having trouble counting 12 platforms.
I can't think of
12. 12? Okay. Let's see. GBA, DS, PC, Mac, and then a PC and a Mac Activity Center, PS3, 360, PS2, Xbox.
PSP.
PSP, GameCube.
I guess I didn't think of Mac. I was at a lot. Mm-hmm.
What's Activity Center?
Activity Center is like, color the pictures, print it up, play a little snake game. It's for, you know, like little kids, like, you know, 3 years to 6 years old.
The thing that's not really what we consider a game traditionally,
but it's
sold as a PC SKU with that license.
Yeah,
some of them sell very, very well.
And the way that we approach this isn't the only way to get into it, and we can cover that a bit more later, but we went from the approach, as well as a lot of other studios that are existing contract studios, go, okay, here's what we're good at. How can we be useful to your publisher?
And so is that how you guys were able to get the gig, because you have the experience of Cars and some other big titles behind you? Say, listen, we've worked on this and this and this. You can see that we have strengths in these areas, so you should give us a project that would allow us to flourish.
Right. Well, let's see, that, you know, that, yeah, that's a big part of it. It's, and, you know, and also the individuals on the team, you know, have a lot under the belt. We had a lot, several leads, several, you know, directors, and just really solid people, you know, that we could tap that
and
were
just,
available right now.
And yeah, just
you
knowing
had to
people.
Prove to the publisher that you had those people.
Yeah, it was easy to do because we just had a layoff. So.
All right. Great. Well, we've got one more segment. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We're sitting here talking to Big Bang Entertainment.
Yeah, I got it right.
Chris and Ken.
Big Bang Entertainment That's Studios.
Right. That's right.
Now, just like you guys have to get publishers to pay the bills, we have to pay our bills. So I want everyone to know that our wonderful sponsor is the University of Advancing Technology. You can go to uat.edu to learn about what they offer, and that is education. Right, Rich?
Yeah.
And if you've paid your phone bill, then you have the luxury of calling us at 866-536-1100.
Yeah. So we got about 10 minutes left in the show. How much more do we have for these guys?
You know what?
We could just talk about new stuff. Forget about their shit and just...
Actually, maybe I have maybe a challenging question. I don't know. Maybe not so much. But what did you guys think was, you know, in this whole process that you went through, the hardest part of starting your studio?
The hardest part,
or maybe the most surprising, like, whoa, we never realized that we had to get, like, you know, I don't know, like locks on our doors or something like that.
Oh, well, I think the most surprising part was, like, it's kind of like how long it takes to get, you know, contracts through, even though when you may even have all the main business terms, like, yeah, all laid out, and it takes a long time, and you got to pay lawyers to do that too.
Not just contract. I mean, you might have all the support from their top end. You know, you're trying to accelerate the contract as quickly as possible. Okay, you get the contract done. Now, just in, if you're going with a big publisher, just to actually get the checks and to get it to go through their accounting and, you know, accounts payable, I mean, that can take another few weeks. And if you have to, you know, get people salary checks, it yeah. can really take you by surprise.
Well, fortunately, our publisher Sony was, you know, really good about that. There's you know, as good as it gets, in from what I've seen. So, but you know, normally it would take a big publisher, like, you know, it could be a couple months.
did you try to, like, sneak in, like, some funny lines in the contract to see if anyone would notice? Like,
no.
Like, Ken will get a chocolate bar every 3 weeks.
No.
Or something.
No.
No.
This is our first deal. No.
Yeah, they wouldn't like that. Huh? It's
not that don't, even. Don't stir the lawyer hornet's nest.
Yeah. Lawyers don't have good senses of humor. What?
All right. So now you've got the studio. You've got 10 guys. They're all working on their tech stuff, and I assume you get information from Sony a lot, telling you what they want you to work on or what thing right. they need done this week or
well,
whatever.
Typically, all that's outlined for the entire span of that contract, exactly what you're going to be delivering in your milestone increments. You know, this is what we're delivering this month. This is what we're delivering the next month, all the way out to the completion of whatever project that is.
And so it starts with, you know, like a design and a technical design that they approve. You know, it's the broad strokes, and then throughout development, they'll have feedback and say, hey, you know, we like what you guys did here, but, you know, it's not really working out. Maybe, you know, tweak it here. And
so, you know, when you first sign on with them, what's your expectation for how long you'll be working on this one project for them?
Well, in this case here, it was about 6 months for, you know, the first, you know, for our first few games here. So
you say we've got steady work for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
Barring something insane. I assume they could break contract whenever they want.
Sure, of course.
As you guys probably could as well, right? But you can pretty much no.
No.
Okay, fine. So they hold the marbles, and basically, though, you can consider yourselves having worked for 6 months, and then at that point there's the presumption that if you do well, then they might give you more. Or do you have the option to just, okay, find some other publisher exactly. to do some of the
well program? I mean, you have to right. you have to start, you know, figuring out what you want to do. I mean, whether, you know, going with them and talking to them about, hey, we have some ideas, let's start talking about what we want to do at the end of the time that we've already allotted working with you, or and also talking to other people and trying to set up and get the wheels in motion. Because like I said, you know, you might have all your ducks in a row and you might be totally ready to go on something, but just the logistics of going from that to getting a check to continue to fund your studio might be, you know, 2, 3, 4 months.
So now I realize we're talking about logistics. Here you've only got 10 people, and they're supposedly working on stuff. So then how do you take the time out of your own schedules to actually... I mean, you don't have a team that's your manager, so to speak. Like an entertainer has a manager who figures all that crap out for him. You guys don't really have that.
That's kind of my focus is, you know, the business side of things. And, you know, like, you know, we'll, you know, turn up the heat on, you know, discussions with other publishers when, you know, that time comes.
So that's basically your gig. Like, everyone else works on the game, and your job is to make sure that the company stays afloat by getting projects, getting work, and communicating with different groups to make sure that you can let them know you need something more past whatever your current
exactly.
job is.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got it easy. You don't have to crunch code at all.
No, but, you know, I work late like other, you know, other people too. And
dude, I'm just mentioning that you don't have to feel bad just because I said you have it easy. That's cool. But I mean, that's a gig I would enjoy that. You'd be like, hey, we are done making your mini game.
Yeah, but he's also he's responsible for the game just as much as we are. So.
He's responsible for getting you paid, I think, is really... and that in itself is responsible for the game, right? I mean, that's key.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And plus, I mean, doing this type of work, I mean, you're building a relationship with a publisher and you're building their trust in you and you're showing, you know, here's what we can deliver, you know, here's what we're doing. And then that really helps you later on when you're talking about, you know, having them give you money to do your own thing or them finding other work for you and so on. Because to be honest, finding good, reliable work in the industry, even for employees for your own internal studios, is really difficult. And it can take a very long time. It can take months and months and months to, you know, just to fill a mid-level engineering position with a satisfactory candidate. So if they, you know, start a working relationship with somebody who is really strong and can really contribute to their business, then they're going to, you know, barring some sort of other issues in that company, want to continue that relationship.
Alright.
Well, Rich, do you have any questions, Rich?
Okay.
And we're content with that as well.
I want to give the vision to everybody who's listening. Rich is just wearing a shirt that says, I'm probably lying. I like that. So no, you can have some questions, but I have a hard time. Like, I struggle. If I decided to do something this large, right, where what I do affects the lives of 9 other people, I have to step out there and make something happen. If you didn't have these contacts to begin with, I'm guessing that you would have been hard up to actually produce anything.
Yeah, it would have been really hard. And even having you know, tons of contacts and also, you know, the team having a good track record and that, because of the, you know, business circumstances at individual publishers and that kind of thing, it makes it hard for them to just take a flyer and say, oh, okay, well, here's, you know, $20 million, guys, you know, go,
yeah,
you know, make a game, see in a few years, and, you know, we'll see if we can sell it. So, you know, there's times when publishers go, okay, well, we're not signing anything else up. There's other times when they're like, okay, we gotta, you know, get some more products in.
And I said earlier that I wanted to touch on this. This is the way that we approached it. And if you're taking a group of people from an existing studio, our method of approaching this is a very common one, because you can't start work on something while you're at somewhere else because it will be owned by the people you're working for, et cetera, et cetera. For people outside the industry looking to get started, there's completely different ways to actually approach this, more of the XNA indie games model, which is take your spare time, develop something cool, you know, try to get it pushed as far forward in production as you can, you know, just in your spare time with people that you can, you know, share the development with that are also working in their spare time, and then get it to a point where you can start pitching it to publishers saying, hey, look, we've made this thing already. You know, do you want to help us push it the last mile and get it out the door? Or, hey, we've already gotten it all the way done. Will you publish it on your platform? And what do we need to do to facilitate that?
Well, see, that's the sort of way I imagine I would have to start. Like, I've got the iPhone and I watch the App Store and all that. And I have friends who've, know people who've put games on the App Store and are making tons of money. Just hand over fist, at least. Given that it was made by a single person, right? Some stupid application, some
right.
little thing that he made sells for $2 a pop, and now he's making way more money than he does at his day job. And so, like, do you guys have anything in your contract that prevents you from working on other projects while you're working on this one?
There's some restrictions. You know, it's going to be with any publisher.
I'm sure there's a non-compete agreement. Like, you can't make another game for some other MMO.
Right, and you have to make sure that you're not utilizing, you know, intellectual property inadvertently from the things that you're actually being paid to work on, of course.
Right.
So, you mean you can't use the IP of the project that they gave you?
Or the code or
code like and stuff like that.
Well, of course. So you mean you're worried of like you might produce some procedure or function. I'm not up on modern coding.
But well, also just like design elements, you know, if there's something really clever design-wise that they have there, you know, you have to be careful that you don't incorporate that inadvertently into, you know, a version project that's not related with that publisher.
Like the musician who steals some popular music and doesn't even realize it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, okay. For us right now, we're focused on making these games as great as we can and, you know,
and not working on anything
that publisher
else.
Really happy.
All right. Cool. I'm going to go work on some iPhone games. That's what I'm doing with my spare time. And anyway, I appreciate you guys coming into the studio today. Do we have guests next week?
Not yet, but...
But you're working on it.
I'm working on it. We got some cool stuff coming up.
All right, we got a lot. So stay tuned to chatterboxgameshow.com. Go check out uat.edu if you want to help us pay our bills. And, well, if you have any questions for us, you can always email Ara or Alon at chatterboxgameshow.com. We'll be back next week.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases are belong to us.